Hi, how are you? My name is Simon Smart. Welcome to the new form of life and faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. It's the beginning of a brand new year and a brand new radio segment. Join us each week to hear us wax long and lyrical about Christianity and its relationship with everyday life. Today, fresh starts. What do they mean to us? Maybe the start of a new job, the joy of new life, moving to a new city, perhaps travel, that sort of thing. This is a particularly appropriate topic given that it is a new year. Now, I love fresh starts. The beginning of a new year for me means summer, new opportunities, sometimes a clean desk to begin the year. Justine Toews with me. Justine, what about you? Fresh starts.
Yeah, I love fresh starts. One of the biggest things, one of the biggest things I like to do at the start of the year is to buy a new diary.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I completely, there's a lot of excitement and anticipation that surrounds that, especially when it comes to filling in important dates, plans, you know, I'm just trying to work out how life is going to play out in 2012. And I think I like it because it's, you know, full of possibility. There's this chance to wipe the slate clean and start again.
Now, speaking of wiping the slate clean, what about New Year's resolutions? Have you made any of those?
Yes, I make the same each year, actually, which would involve an exercise plan, better time management, more discipline when it comes to writing, consume less and declutter. So kind of get rid of all the stuff that I don't need anymore. My personal favourite, though, I saw a Cosmopolitan magazine cover from January 2011, and it says, get all you want in 2011. Get rich, be sexy, find love. And it provides month-by-month strategies so you can do this. Yes. Now, I'm probably not the only person to think, now this is doomed to fail, right? Like, if everyone got rich, discovered sexiness, and found true love, then Cosmopolitan would go out of business. So probably the its 2012 aims will probably be the same. What about you, Simon? What about your New Year's resolutions?
I tend not to make them, to be honest, because I know I won't keep them.
Mm.
But I do sometimes have this sense of a renewed idea of what I want to be, what I want to do, and sort of loosely setting goals for that. Perhaps I should be better at this.
You need an accountability partner, I think.
Yeah, maybe. anyway, we're talking New Year's resolutions. We took to the streets of Sydney to ask people what kinds of New Year's resolutions they'd made. What's your name?
Leith.
Leith, New Year's resolutions, what have you made?
All right, well, one of them was to, like, get into contact with a few people I've fallen out of contact with. And one, which is more personal, was, like, to try not to get run over by a train, was to continue learning Mandarin, because I started it, so just to continue on that. So there were a couple.
How have you gone with those?
So far, not that good.
Priya, have you ever made a New Year's resolution?
Oh yes, lots.
What sorts of things?
It could be very small things, like maybe waking up half an hour early than usual. So starting with some small things, but it could also be big things like this year I should save a little bit of money to travel somewhere and go some places.
And do you usually keep those?
The smaller ones are never met, but the bigger ones sometimes get met.
I don't usually make them because usually I can't stick to them. But I made one this year to have a happy year this year.
And how's it going so far?
It's going really well because I've just started this new job that I love and meeting lots of new people and nothing's gone wrong. So, yeah, it's going really well.
Good stuff. Cool. And what's your name?
Kate.
And Kate, have you made any New Year's resolutions this year?
I have. My New Year's resolution was to get fit.
How's that going for you?
It's going pretty well. My muscles are sore, so I think that's an indication that I'm being successful so far.
And have you made this kind of resolution in the past to get fit?
Yes.
How did it go then?
I often have bursts of inspiration and then it plateaus off, but not this time.
Just want to lose more weight so I can get fit again. So my wife loves me again. She loves me anyway.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity.
It's interesting, isn't it? It seems that people want to eat better, have a better life-work balance, get fit, spend more time on their relationships and so on. It seems like we all need work, Justine.
Yeah, it does seem that we all need to work on ourselves. And I'm sure if you talk to people, people can readily list all the things that need improving. And I think that the whole New Year's resolution-making thing seems based on that idea and that recognition that we all need to get better. You know, we should be doing things differently. We're not okay the way that we are.
Yeah, it's great to make New Year's resolutions, but I wonder how many actually get implemented into people's lives.
Yeah, but by the time April rolls around, I'm normally admitting defeat around then. I think that by then, and especially, I'm too busy getting on with ordinary life. And I think that's the problem with the New Year's resolution. It implies that I have more control over my personality and attributes than I actually have. I mean, for example, I can say that I want to be better at this, and so I need to give attention to a trait of mine in order to do that. But I can't simply, you know, stand back from myself and force that change through, even if it's going to make life better or sweeter for me. So in some ways, the self that's doing the work is the same self that's being acted on. So there's a lot of conflicted interests going on here.
Yeah, I think we all
can identify,
get a sense of that.
Yeah.
Of course, it doesn't mean that change is impossible, though. You see this all the time. But it does make change more difficult, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, I started thinking about this the other day and I was like, well, when it comes down to it, what are we really after with the New Year's resolution? And I found this quote that I think cuts to the heart of what these New Year's resolutions are really aiming for. And it says, a sense of myself that isn't burdened by my own life. We can see that sense of conflict going on there. I think that there's a real sense of being weighed down by our pasts.
I suppose this is even more so in a digital era where everything can be recalled at the click of a button. The internet doesn't let us forget.
Yeah, and I was surprised to discover a couple of weeks ago that there are actually online services available that can wipe your online identity clean, of course, for a big price. Because people know, right, that you might want to erase that indiscretion from your past.
So is that so you're not haunted by your indiscretions forever? I can imagine a number of American politicians who'd probably like to take advantage of that sort of service.
Yeah, that's right. They'd probably need a huge bill just to wipe what happened in 2011, actually, if you're thinking of the same person I'm thinking of. But it's not just politicians. I mean, sorry to bring this up when it's a new year and all, but Rebecca Black and her single Friday. Okay, I won't do it. Friday. She might be enjoying, or she might have enjoyed, her brief moment of fame, you know, then. But in 20 years' time, she might wish that she'd never made up that song called Friday. And I know that I wish that she hadn't. I found this article by a Harvard Law School professor, and he actually supports an idea that he calls reputation bankruptcy. So the idea here is that every 10 years or so, people would be given an opportunity to wipe their online reputation slates clean and start afresh. So, and this could happen a couple of times over a lifetime, so you might have second or third chances to clean up your online reputation so you're not just, you know, rubbished forever or forever associated with that thing that you did 25 years ago.
For more Christian perspective on contemporary life, publicchristianity.org.
Often the desire for a fresh start brings from this idea that you want a second chance, doesn't it? You spoke before about us feeling weighed down by our past. It certainly applies to the internet, where a digital trail can follow us seemingly forever. Mm. But you and I both read a story recently of a reformed skinhead who went through months of agonising surgery to remove racist tattoos from his face and neck.
Yeah, this guy was covered in tattoos. He had a blood-soaked razor, swastikas, the letters HATE spelled out across his knuckles. He was really really hardcore in that US white power movement.
He was. He was known as the pit bull of skinheads. That's in the words of Joseph Roy, who investigates hate and extreme groups. Apparently there was no one more aggressive, confrontational, notorious than Widner. And he was in and out of prison. He was incredibly violent.
His story doesn't end there. He actually turned his back on his old ways and left the movement. And he was trying to restart his life, to make a fresh start with his wife and children. But of course, he's got, you know, these tattoos all over his body, and not just where he can hide them, but all over his face and his neck. And you can imagine going into a job interview with that, right?
Could be a problem.
Yeah, it could be a problem.
Yeah, and he really didn't like what he had been. He desperately wanted to get away from his old life, but the tattoos formed a kind of constant reminder of that. Now, this family had very little money. He was determined to get these things off, and we're told he even contemplated dousing his face in acid. He was so desperate for this. The great part of the story, though, is that he turned eventually, he must have been really desperate, he turned for help from a black man, and eventually from the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a civil rights group in Alabama that tracks hate groups, militias, and extreme organizations. Now, we have to remember, of course, these people are people who were the enemy for him. They would have seen him as that. He would have seen them as that. Mm. And here they were, this group, convinced that he was genuine in turning away from his former life. And so they agreed to help him. I think it's a wonderful part of this story.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really, this part of the story really struck me, because this Southern Poverty Law Centre, they actually called on a donor to that organisation. And that person actually agreed to pay $35,000 to have the tats removed, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. Like $35,000, that is barely a house deposit in Sydney, right? And someone has just given that money so that this guy could have a fresh start for his life and for his family.
Yeah, and the process he had to go through was not straightforward. It involved a whole lot of painful surgery. I read 25 surgeries over 16 months on his face, his neck, his hands. He said it was more painful than anything he'd gone through in the past, including, you know, bar brawls and being beaten up in jail.
Yeah, so he clearly had a whole sphere of reference to refer to in terms of how painful things could be. It turns out that a film crew also documented all these surgeries, and the footage is of him writhing and moaning in agony. But apparently he didn't care. You know, in fact, it's reported that Widnar felt that he deserved the pain and the public humiliation as a kind of penance for everything that he'd done over the years.
He's quoted as saying, "It's a small price to pay for being human again."
Mm.
He obviously felt he'd become something less than that in his previous life. So since then, he's helped investigators and police with information about white hate groups and placed himself in enormous danger by doing this. Of course, it's one thing to kind of get out of the organisation. It's another when you start helping authorities
investigate them.
So he's in real danger. It's an ongoing thing. It's a real tale of redemption, this story. It's amazing that he turned from his former life and was prepared to go through so much to put it behind him.
Yeah, it seems to me like it reads like a metaphor of Christian forgiveness, this idea of grace extended to someone who no doubt felt like he didn't deserve it. And that forgiveness, it actually leads to a new life and the chance to be something different from what he once was.
I think it is. It's like a modern day sort of metaphor of this, isn't it? It reminds me of what the Apostle Paul writes to believers in Jesus when he says that once you were dead in your sins, but now you're alive. Once you were enemies of God, but now you're reconciled to him. It's a wonderful picture of grace.
And the Brian Widnar story also shows that, when it came down to it, he was pretty helpless. Widnar wanted this second chance really desperately, but he couldn't really do anything about it for himself. He actually needed help. And as you said, Simon, he needed help from those people he might once have called his enemies.
Yeah, it's the idea of needing help from someone else other than ourselves that's the thing that resonates with the claims of Christianity, of course. Because in the Christian story, it's Jesus who goes through the agony of crucifixion and death so that we can be free. Of course, in the Widnar story, he goes through that pain of penance and a kind of atonement for himself. But the Christian story is about Jesus going through all that pain on behalf of others.
Yeah, and that gift of Jesus brings new life and a renewed sense of peace within yourself, with God, but also peace between people who might otherwise hate each other. I mean, apparently after the documentary about Widnar was screened at one time, a black woman embraced him, and with tears in her eyes, she said she forgave him for what he'd been in the past. So, yeah, there is an opportunity there for a relationship, a friendship to be restored across barriers of race that would have otherwise kept them apart.
Well, there's no doubt we could all do with a fresh start.
The Centre for Public Christianity, Beyond Religion.
Well, next week on Life and Faith, we're going to be talking about church. What is it? Why do people not go to church? Does the church still have a future in this country? Does it have something to offer? I'm going to be talking with Michael Frost, who's an evangelist and author, and also Mick Martin, who's a pastor, senior pastor at the Upper Room Church in North Sydney. There's going to be lots to discuss, some controversial topics possibly, and I'm looking forward to that lively discussion. Please join me next week on Life and Faith.
For more Christian perspective on contemporary life, publicchristianity.org.